Welcome to part one of a lively conversation with David Rudisha, the world and Olympic record holder in 800 metres and dual Olympic gold medalist. I hope you enjoy listening as much as I enjoyed sitting down with David in Nairobi.
3, 2, 1.
David, it's an absolute pleasure to meet you. You're considered to be athletics royalty and one of the many names you've been called as the king of 800 metres. What are some of the other things you've been called and which one's your favourite title?
Well, people call me, of course, many names. You know, one is the king of 800 meters, the king of middle distance sometime. And, of course, first time when I got a very special name is when I came back from a World Junior way back in 2006. And actually, I was named as the Pride of Africa.
And this was by your Maasai brothers, is that right?
Absolutely, yes. You know, I'm one of the few athletes who come from the Maasai tribe and one of the best who have reached actually to the highest level of winning world titles in world championships and in Olympic Games. So they are very proud and they like to associate me with such a good pride names like the king. You know, in our culture, the king is actually the lion in the jungle.
Yeah, and in fact, wasn't there some connection between you or other people needing to kill a lion in order to graduate? I mean, can you just explain a little bit about that?
Yes, we have a lot of, tradition and the rite of passage in Maasai community. And this is a culture that most young people have to go through most of the time before they graduate to elderhood. So way back in 2010 is when we had our rite of passage to graduate from young boys to now to like from Moran to elder. About to be called an elder, a young elder.
Yes, so, I was going to say, not that old.
Not that old. Just to graduate from that youthful. Now you can go to a stage where you can marry, you can start a family. So you are graduating. So it was way back in 2010. And that is actually the year that I was very busy running some of special races in Europe. And I was actually focusing for my world record. So I told them, hey guys, I really understand that this is our tradition. And of course, I'm quite very busy. Currently, I'm working in my athletics and I'm keen to break and to run some fast races to break world records. So they allow me to do that. But when I came back, it was actually toward the end of the ceremony. And they were very glad. In fact, they appointed me as one of their chief because they say an achievement of breaking two world records in a span of 2 weeks is even more than a task of killing a lion. So, although we try to encourage them nowadays that we don't want lion to be killed because this is something we are proud of and we need the wild animal because this is what is we are also benefiting from as a community, as a culture.
Good to know that there was not blood spilled for you in that process. David, you have just come back from the World Athletics Championships in Budapest, where you were an ambassador. What was that experience like?
Well, it was really a great experience being an ambassador for such a big event in the world. I was, I'm really glad to be, appointed as one. And we were three of us with Blanka Vlasic and Thompson.
Daly Thompson,
yeah. Yes. And it's such a great honor because I'm the only one from Africa. And it was a great experience, you know, to create such a wonderful championship. It was one of the best. And it was really good because it was a successful one. You remember some years back, we had so many challenges with, you know, the COVID-19, whereby we didn't have spectators gracing the event like the World Championships and in Olympic Games. But this one was really very nice because the stadium was almost full. And it was really great to see that the championship is back to where it was before.
Now, do you think the fact that Sebastian Coe is the head of the International Athletics Federation is also a former 800-meter runner, do you think that influenced the decision to make you an ambassador?
Yeah, Sebastian Coe is one of the best athletes, you know, who has done so well in the previous year, around 1980s. He also once held the world record in 800 meters. And I know, yes, he loves athletics so much. And, you know, me being there, it was a great honor. And I believe, you know, yes, it's one way also of giving back, you know, to athletics. And it was such a great moment because we interacted with the athletes and we interacted also with the fans and so on. And I think they were very happy. And in fact, some of the people working together, they were really appreciated that I came to the championships. And I think it really worked very well. And I believe I was also one of the right ones.
Yes, no, and I'll bet. Head of the championships, you appealed to fans and to athletes to uphold the spirit of sportsmanship. Now, for you, what does that entail?
Well, sports actually is one of the activities that we love so much. So many youths around the world engage themselves in sports, and sports have been used also to pass so many messages across the world. And so many sportsmen and women have been one of our greatest ambassador. Sports also, as I can say, we go through a lot of challenges, you know, here and there. And of course, we also know that we have challenges with doping and so on, which is one of the tasks that we also have been fighting here and there, you know, as now that I also work with the sports management, and it is quite a challenge. And I feel like, you know, this is not a good thing, it's not a good practice, and we encourage, you know, everyone who is participating in any field, in any sport, that we should uphold the integrity, you know, we should love what we do, we should encourage the clean sport, and also to give a chance to those who deserve the best to celebrate their greatest moment in athletics and their greatest moment in sport at that time. And that's why I would love, you know, to pass that message that we should also become the real sportsmen and women who love sport in any way and in every way.
Now, you got to fire the starting pistol. Were you itching to possibly be running around the track, or you're quite happy to fire the starting pistol and then stand back and watch?
Well, yeah, it was a very great experience. You know, I never started any event on the track with the same, you know, pistol that they use on the track. And it was really great because I feel like the same pistol has been starting all these races. And it was such a great honor. And some of even the best starters that were there, actually, they said they have been starting some of my races in the championship.
Really?
I never knew some of them because we are always busy on the line, focusing on our
event. Wow.
Or waiting for the gun, but we never really know who really started the competition. But it was such a great experience. You know, I started somewhere about 10 races for media, and it was such a great experience, you know, interacting with media, and you know, they were running also 800 meters. It was like more like mixed event, men, women joining, and it was such a great experience. And I was asking some of them, how do they feel? And even before the race, some of them come and ask some tips on how to improve on their personal best, even though they were running something like 2 minutes and so. But it was great to watch.
Some of us would be quite happy to be able to run 800 meters in 2 minutes, I've got to tell you. So during the event, for you, watching from the sidelines, was it hard?
Yeah, well, you know, it's such a, you know, a joy, you know, to watch athletes running. You know, for somebody like me, I feel very proud because I have achieved almost everything I wished, you know, right from the way I was starting athletics, in athletics. You know, the greatest honor is to win an Olympic title, to win a world title. And of course, most good athletes also love to break the world record, but that is always not guaranteed. But if you get one, it's a great honor. And I'm glad that I was able to achieve that during my career. And that makes me so happy, even if now I can watch from outside, and if there's any way I can do to work with sportsmen and women, I love to, because I know how much it feels.
Now, your world record you set at the London 2012 Olympics. So, and I know a lot of people have been asking you this, but what is your feeling about when you think someone might step forward and dethrone you as the king of 800 metres?
Well, yes, I've been asked that question severally. And if you try to go back to history in 800 meters, you find that, you know, Sepko, when he broke the world record, he held it for 16 years. And then Wilson Kipketer, Kenyan-born Danish, broke and he held it for 13 years. My world record since 2010, it's now also 13 years. So it tells you, like, that is about over 30 years. Only about 3 years, three person have all that world record. So it's very tight.
I've heard you say that you actually look forward to the time when your world record is broken. Is there not some part of you that's sitting there going, don't break it yet?
Yes, you know, world record is always special. And though world record has got no time limit. In championship, we always, it's like a biannual event after every 2 years, and in Olympics after every 4 years. Although for the first time it was postponed in 2020 because of COVID-19. So that is the time I also hold the Olympic title for 5 years.
I was excellent, a bonus.
Olympic champion for 5 years.
Which would be a first.
Yes, but yeah, in world record, you know, you can break even today, then somebody else is running somewhere else, even now about an hour time, or even about 1 day or two, and he breaks that world record. So I say world record is special. Yes, it is almost at the limit, you know, it's almost at the top there to get it. So I'm looking forward, you know. There are so many improvement in terms of technology, in terms of science, like, you know, the type of tartan, you know, the shoes, they are doing quite a lot of improvement. And nowadays, even, you know, they have this lead that on a track, you know, the lights that help show the athletes where actually they are at a certain point. And this is really a great boost, you know. And during my time, you know, like in London, I didn't have a pacemaker, I didn't have anything to see. I just went from gun to tape. And
but you were watching the clock, no?
It was even hard, but yes, I knew I was going fast. I saw the first You know, we have only 2 points, you know, 400 and the 600. So that is the only time we can be able to see the clock. So, no, so it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah, oh boy. Yeah. Now, just when it comes to shoes, have you been involved in shoe design?
During my time when I was still active in running, as I was with Adidas, of course, some of the shoes have been given during my training.
And so were they specially designed for you?
Yeah, they did that one after I broke my world record. Some mm-hmm. of the shoes they started customizing, like I train with some sample and mm-hmm. then they take it back after I've used them. So
that you would give them feedback?
Yes, they give feedback and they take the shoes. So they go and do some more tests. They see how the performance and everything, the durability and also that kind of. But in 2016, yes, the reason why I also requested for my shoes to be checked properly because I had one leg, the right one is a little bit longer by half.
Really?
No, yes. Ooh. So
so did that have anything to do with your keyhole surgery that you'd had on your knee? Or this had always been the case?
No, I don't think it had any effect on that. But my one leg is a little bit longer than the left, but it's quite normal.
Clearly, that's a good thing.
Yes.
Wow.
So the improvement of shoes, depend with the feedback of the athletes. So they have to give most of the athletes a sample. And that has been done for many years to see how they can improve the shoes that athletes use.
Oh, so David, you know how within the world of athletics, there are some real big personalities and some real show ponies, if you like, who have their own shoes and they're all branded and lots of different, bright colours. You didn't go down that path. Why is that? I mean, was that an option for you? Could you have had like the Rhodesia runner or something branded especially that was being sold?
I didn't do most of the, branded stuff like Rhodesia and so on. I was just kind of a person that would like to just use like any other, running gear like any other athletes, their outfit. So I didn't have any problem with that because, it was also good, to be just like any other athlete and it feels special because we compete on an even platform. So I was just mm-hmm. happy, as long as I get everything that I'm comfortable with, I was just happy to use that.
Yeah. David, you are someone who has been at one extreme end of the fitness spectrum. And I'm just curious to know, when you are so incredibly super fit, how do you feel? I mean, are you bouncing out of bed every day and you're full of energy? I mean, what does it feel like?
Training, actually, it has so many stages. And at some point, definitely, you feel your body responding better than the time maybe you started in the beginning of the season. And sometimes you feel like your body also is not responding at the right time. So sometimes it delays, sometimes it even you start feeling better very fast. And you have to be careful about that because sometimes you get fit too early. And
really?
You can't really hold that fitness until the end of the season. You might get tired or exhausted before the end of the season. And if you have any major championships, we usually try to prioritize that. We want to be at the top at that particular time because that is where the really showcase of our talent is. And my coach was very good and we used to plan in the beginning of the season, and we plan our competition also as well as part of our test, and I can try a few races here and there and then go back to and then come back to Kenya and see what we can adjust or see what we can improve, or if I'm going too fast, I can see
too fast
what I can do to make sure that I stay in form for the rest of the season. So I was quite very good in that, and I was good in feeling my body.
Your coach was our Irish brother, Colm O'Connell, and you were together for over 12 years?
First time I met brother Colm was way back in 2005, when I was in Form 1.
Wow.
So we stayed with brother until the end of my career in 2017. That is when I competed last. And then from there, I got some problem with injury. But we are always together. We work together in one way or the other. We communicate, we meet. But I haven't been training with him so much since 2015 because there were some other young athletes who were coming in.
Ah.
And, you know, Brother Colm still stays in St. Patrick.
Mm-hmm. In E10.
And he has this very small house, you know, which can accommodate very few athletes. And at some point we feel like, wow, we would like to see these young athletes who are coming up also getting some more space. So you just feel like, let me. But I used to train from home. So I was spending most of the time with my family, which is not very far from E10. So I can just come for training, but I go back home since 2015, 2016. So he's quite a very good coach with a lot of experience.
Now, what is the bond like with a coach when you spend so much time with them? Because I gather your schedule involved training 6 days a week.
Well, yes. You know, a coach is just like a father. You know, he's just like a parent. And especially for most of us, like me, who started when I was very young.
Mm.
And he was really supporting. He was really supportive in terms of training, in terms of, you know, even organized our school fees and so on.
Mm.
And he also guided us a lot during our early training, during our early ages in training in athletics. So I've spent some good time with him, and most of the time even my mother used to start complaining at some point that why are you spending most of the time in Eton with your coach? You don't even want to come home. And that's the time when I was still in high school, because I used to go only home for about less than a week in a year.
So
after school and during school holiday, I spend all the time with coach. And in most school holidays, we're also doing school competition. So I didn't have a lot of time to go home.
David, when you're working so closely with a coach, did you ever have days where you told him to take a hike? I mean, did you have disagreements?
Not really. You know, Brother Colm was, he is very understanding. He's one of the coach who really understand. And yes, at some point I used to tell him that, especially when I feel like there's some type of training that I want to do, I just ask him, okay, can you give me like a week? I want to do my own training.
Really?
And at that time, I just go out there. I do my things, you know, even if it's on the track or on the road. And I just want to feel my body, you know, how I can do. And I just do some, you know, like if it is fat leg, I don't go with, you know, my watch, you know, to time. I just do, you know, with my head and the way I feel in my body. And this one, I didn't want anybody to watch or see what I'm doing, because I take sometimes longer rest. And I do some short, maybe sprint. And sometimes I do long sprint. I took short rest. So it was just kind of feeling interval between me and, you know, the environment around me.
Now, the fartlek is the 300-meter sprint, and then you take a break, and then you do another 300 meters?
Yeah, most of the time when we are doing with a coach is they design a kind of, you do maybe 2 minutes and you rest, you run for 2 minutes, you rest for 1.5 seconds and maybe another 2 minutes or 1.5 minutes. It depends with the interval because we depend on him just to make a whistle. And he's following us with a car. So, which was quite tough, especially when you are doing with other athletes. And most of the time, I was also training with a long distance runner like Agustin Choge and Isaac Songo. So it was tough for me because the first minute sometimes it does it like we can do for a 3 minutes run. And after that, wow, I can feel like it's not that easy. And maybe short break and maybe just a bit of jogging for about 1.5 minutes and then we start again. So it was quite a heavy load for me. And yes, it works, you know, in terms of endurance. That also assisted me a lot. But most of the time I used to suffer, you know, training with those guys, especially on the road. But on the track, I used to train alone. And of course, maybe with sprinters like my pacemaker, Sami Tangui, mm-hmm. although he was just doing a few of the sessions because he was not as strong as I am.
Mm. Now, Etienne, at the time you started training there, was really quite a no-frills destination, if you like. So did that for you mean that you had less distraction, do you think?
When I joined Etienne St. Patrick Training Camp, in the year 2005, it was not as bad as I can say as it was those years when Brother Colm first joined in the 1970s, because he used to usually tell us the stories that when he arrived there the first time there was no power, there was no water connection, so I don't know how he survived it. Coming from Ireland, where he was getting everything and surviving in Kenya with such a minimal, infrastructure and so on, it was quite a journey for him. But for us, it was much better because there was water and electricity. But we didn't have internet, so of course. But
and possibly you didn't have a smartphone back then either.
Absolutely, we didn't have until when we were starting getting exposure. You know, coming to Europe, that is when we bought some of our first phone, and of course the computer. And yes, in 2007, yes, we started also joining social media. That's the first time I joined Facebook.
Your coach, Brother Colm, has spoken very highly of you, and he speaks of you being a wonderful person as well as an incredible athlete. And he describes you as the consummate championship runner. Where did that come from, your ability to win a championship when it really mattered?
When I was in high school, is the time that I knew that I have talent and I am really good. I was really good because in high school I used to do three events, you know, 400 flat, 800 and 4x4. And each we do like heats and finals. And I usually win definitely the two of them. I used to win 800 and 400. Mm-hmm. I've never lost before in high school. And 4x4 depend with the team, if the team is strong. But mostly my team used to win. I can say 100% we won in high school. Mm-hmm. We have never lost. And I mean, this seems 99%. Only one time in my school, that is when I only won in division. But when after we join this other school as district, we normally select the best team. So almost 99. And it was really tough, you know, competing with one athlete in 400. And after that, going to compete again with a different athlete who is fresh in, you know, another race, and in coming back to 4x4, it was not easy. There was a time actually after I finished my 400 hits,
mm-hmm.
in between, it was just about 10 minutes before I start my 800 meters. So I didn't even know whether I should go for cool down. Whether I should be, because they were already, it was just the girls who were running one race, and then they were calling our event. And yes, it was tough. It was very tough for the body. But I went there, I won again. And you can't imagine, like less than 15 minutes, you're running another race. And that is when I knew, yes, I can really handle championships very well, because I was winning in fast, in fast competition, and as well in one of the slowest also. Like that one, that day I decided to intimidate these guys. They knew I was good, and I used as these tactics whereby when the gun went, I went too fast, the first 100 meters before we entered into, we marched into the, after the 100 meters. And then I slowed down because I was still breathing. I was coming from 400, I was still breathing. And I could feel, yes, it's tough for the body. But I cruised the 400 in about 57, which was very slow. And this guy, I didn't know, nobody passed, went past me. And then now we just went down and sprinted the last 200 meters. We almost ran 2 minutes.
What I find so fascinating, David, having listened to a number of your interviews, is you seem to be to have this incredible memory for the times you ran in different races, even way back. So is it all imprinted in your head?
Yes, this is always a special event, in special occasion, whereby I feel like if somebody knew that I was just coming from 400 and I did 47 in that heat in just like 10 minutes, and that's when I was still a junior.
Right.
And if somebody knew was strong in that heat of the 800, he knew that I was coming from 400, definitely he could have just decided to take it on and go, push the pace to a higher one. I don't think I could have survived, but I don't know how I was able to control that situation, to control these guys. And we ran a very slow race just to fit my situation and my, position at that particular moment. But it's something, you cannot tell them. But the following day, the program was a little bit better. It was widely spread. Mm-hmm. There was enough time to rest between the 800 and the 400. So I won both events comfortably.
Now, David, your late father, Daniel Rudisha, was a silver medalist in the 4x400-metre relay in the Mexico City Olympics back in 1968. So you also had the advantage of having him as a sounding board, and I'm assuming you learned a lot from him.
Yeah, as I was growing up, it was really special to know that my father was an athlete. My father once traveled out of the country, and it really feels special. And he was once teaching one of the schools that I went. I was really happy because most of the time he was also encouraging young athletes to take part in athletics, although we didn't have proper training, the stadium and so on. It was quite challenging, but it was an advantage on me, living with a champion in the house. And every time, like any other child, we admire our parents in one or the other. And because this is something I felt like, wow, it is very interesting. My father went all the way. And if you try to see the map, all the way to Mexico, you tell us he went to Finland. He raced some races over there. And he told us he met even Queen Elizabeth, the late Queen Elizabeth. He greeted her, one-on-one. So it was really very special. And I said, why? I think I can also, I can also run one time. I would also want to be like my father. And that really inspired me every time, even when I was in school at that young age. Whenever we have school competition, I loved engaging myself in athletics, and I love, being at the front, because Yes, sometimes these other guys, they can tease me, you know, your father is a champion, your father is an Olympic champion. And when they beat me, they feel very proud, you know, and I didn't want that. It's disappointing. So I always have to be there. I always have to give my best, you know.
But it sounds like you really love running.
Yes, I can say almost my entire life I've been running, because even when I was young, we used to chase the rabbits, you know, around home, because we come from near Masai Mara,
mm-hmm.
and we have these wild animals. And when we were young, the one that we used to miss so occasionally is the rabbits, because every time we are looking after our father's cows, the herd, we can bump into, you know, or even the cow disturb them when they are grazing, when they are hiding places during the day. And of course, that is fun for us. You know, we have dogs. And
do you know, David, of all the amazing wildlife in Kenya, I'm amazed you're talking about rabbits and cattle. You must have run into other wildlife.
Yeah, you know, most of them during the day they hide. Like hyenas, the leopards, they used to come at night and they take sheep and goats and so forth. Even sometimes elephant, they can come at night, but during the day you can rarely see them. So, but antelopes and all these other, they used to be just around, you know, the zebras and so forth.
So it sounds like a very much an outdoors-based upbringing that you had.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, and that really, I think, was very helpful, you know, in our upbringing, you know, the growth. And, you know, walking barefoot most of the time, you know, playing out there. And it was really good. I feel sometimes most of the energy and the good sensitivity between the ground and my feet, I think, is because I used to walk even barefoot when I was here, going to school. Even sometimes when I'm playing, you know, we used to play also like this football, but we used to make, you know, with these polythene papers. So it was quite an interesting journey. And that really helped me a lot, because I was very active when I was young.
You've talked about rhythm and the importance of that to you when you're running. And at some stage in your career, you made the decision that for you, you felt the best rhythm when you were leading from the front. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. You know, 800 meters is one of the races that, you know, I tried to master for quite some time.
And you managed, clearly. Yes.
And in the beginning, yes, it's not that easy, you know, to get it right. And you try different tactics. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. It was not easy. Sometimes you can easily make so many mistakes, because in one of the competition, I remember in Doha in 2007, I was out there after my warm-up, and my manager, James Templeton, came and told me, I would like you to run from behind. And yes, it was one of my first major competition. And I was like, wow. I know my manager is very experienced. He's been coaching, he's been managing some of the good 800-meter runner.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he has a very good idea why I should run from behind. And yes, I did as he said. And when the race started, yes, I started from behind. And then it happened to be a single file, you know, whereby the first person is way, way in front, and the single file, I was way, way back. Oh, so after crossing the 400 meters, it was also a fast race. So going down to 300, I tried to come in front. I managed to come all the way almost to position 4-3. But after maintaining that for the calf, it was too much. I felt it was not possible. I was getting tired, and I don't think I had that strength. I was still young, just coming from the World Junior. So I went back, and I didn't get a good position. And after the race, I felt like, wow, I used a lot of energy. Like I was feeling like, wow, I'm just seeing stars. Like I almost fainted. Somehow, when I got out of the track, I felt bad because I felt like I didn't run my race. I ran his race. And I felt like, no, if I had let me to do as I felt into the in the beginning of the race and do what I feel like it was good and learn from the experience in that race, maybe I felt like I could have done better. And I told him, I remember I was a little bit hungry. Even we were there with the Javet, Janet Jepkoski. Oh. And Janet heard that, and every time she keep on reminding me, because I was like, hey, Mari, I ran your race.
But never
next
again.
Next time, don't ever tell me how I ran my race. And I think since then, they understood and they understand me. So they let me run my races. And I won almost every other race that year. I won almost four of them. And I was actually the best 800 meter of the season. And I was still in Form 3. Beating almost all those guys who beat me that day.
You've been listening to the Born Active podcast. David was so generous with his time and sharing insights into his stellar athletics career that his interview continues in part two. You can follow David Rudisha on Facebook or Twitter at Rudisha David. I'm Julie Marks. Thanks for listening.
3, 2, 1.